This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
A massive weekend preview. When isn't it? A massive weekend preview. We got Tottenham, Chelsea, Juventus, AC Milan, PSG, Lyon. We got Jimmy Conrad in the house. Jonathan Johnson later on. Que Golazo weekend preview begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Que Golazo. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Stitcher, thank you so much. Please, Jimmy Conrad in the house. Jimmy, how are you, my man?
I am doing great, LME. It's just game after epic game after epic game. So I'm excited to break down some of these epic encounters for this upcoming weekend.
Epic weekend preview. That's what we're going to call it, of course. And we mentioned a few of the matches that will happen this weekend. There's so much more to come. Jimmy Conrad to give his beautiful charisma, his analysis, his betting tips. Jonathan Johnson will join later as well because PSG have a very big game. When aren't they big for PSG at this point? But against Lyon, of course. But we begin, let's begin, of course, as we always do, in the Premier League. It's a London derby, Tottenham against Chelsea. Nuno Espirito Santo started very well, obviously, with some good 1-0 wins. And then a little bit back to reality against Crystal Palace. So there's that side. Tottenham, on the other hand, you know, they have collected 1 point from the last 15 available. And Chelsea, have been obviously doing their thing as well under Thomas Tuchel, Romelu Lukaku, bringing them to another level. Jimmy Conrad, Tottenham against Chelsea, even though it's pretty early in the season, I feel it's pivotal in regards to how their story will end in May.
I think it's more pivotal for Spurs at this moment than Chelsea. I think Chelsea has their identity. I think Spurs are actually still trying to find it under Nuno. Now that they've actually dealt with some adversity, as you mentioned, they won their first three games 1-0. So everything was cruising. Everybody's like, oh, Nuno's the man, including a big win against Manchester City. And then it's kind of fallen apart a bit. Heung-min Son is hurt. Harry Kane is back, but is he fully committed? Is his heart completely in it? Or is he still kind of disappointed that he didn't get to make the move? So I think there are a couple things at play here. I will say the last time they played with Tuchel in charge, it was 1-0 to Chelsea at Spurs' stadium. Now, another thing I think we should mention is that both teams have midweek games. Chelsea played on Tuesday and Tottenham play on Thursday in France. That feels a little unfair to Spurs to have to kind of juggle that so quickly right after playing that game in the Conference League. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Nuno balances this. And ultimately, I think this is a great first test for him as manager and for the players. Can they solve these problems and solve them quickly, right? I mean, everybody's going to have a dip in form at some point. Can you minimize those dips? And obviously, can you elongate the highs? And that's always the big challenge for any coach. Now, Chelsea are undefeated in 10 of their last 11 away games. Spurs have won 5 out of the last 6 home games. And like that one I said against City, but that was without Harry Kane. So I feel like when Spurs play a big opponent, everything gets a little bit tight. So I got the under 2.5 goals for sure. But Chelsea to win an under 2.5 goals, which they just did in the Champions League, plus 300 is the value there. That hits a lot under Thomas Tuchel. Just something for everybody to consider. They've only given up one goal all season in all competitions. And I should mention too that Lukaku to score first. Now, he scored 3 goals for Chelsea, and all 3 of them have been the first goal of the game. So him to score first is plus 280. Him to score anytime is plus 100. I would take a really hard look at him scoring first because he just seems to want to put a stamp on things as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, 2 things that you said there are key for me. Under 2.5 goals, I 100%. I don't see a goal fest here. And Romelu Lukaku, of course, being the protagonist as well. Tottenham have conceded more Premier League goals against Chelsea. That's 103 than anybody else, any other opponents. Well, they've only lost more games in the competition against Man United. So, you know, Chelsea is not really a great opponent for Tottenham, regardless whether it's a home or away. So, Jimmy, I'm liking what you're saying specifically with Lukaku and being a very sort of, you know, not a golfist specifically. You mentioned Harry Kane. You know, he was probably watching Man City and Jack Grealish doing his thing this midweek. And to your point, you know, thinking other things, do you think though that, you know, that needs to go on the other side now, especially because Heung-min Son obviously not fully available?
100%. Obviously, Harry Kane. Well, not obviously. If you don't know, let me just fill you in so it is obvious for you moving forward. Harry Kane led the Premier League in goals and assists last season. The guy was on fire. He's got neither so far in 198 minutes that he's been on the field. And so that has to change, obviously. For Tottenham to have any type of success, you need your big number nine up top to score goals. So, I mean, we say the same thing about Chelsea and Lukaku. If they really want to achieve and win multiple competitions, he has to show up and play. So, yes, it's pivotal for him, especially without Heung-min Son available, which I think really hurts them in transition in particular. And I think Eric Dier could potentially be out. He came out early against Crystal Palace. You know, Tanganga got that red card. So now they're already a bit depleted in the back line. I'm curious to see how Nuno balances this. Honestly, who's he starting in the Europa League? Who's he starting here? What is he going to do to put this together to try to get results? I think if Spurs fans are being honest, I think they'd be happy with the draw against Chelsea. And I bet you Nuno would take that as well. And not that you go out there with the aim of getting a draw, but you'd be satisfied with it. Obviously, you want to play a particular way that you're comfortable with and feel good about too. But a draw from this Chelsea game, I think, is something they should look at. I just think that Chelsea are too good. And because they have a couple extra days of rest and to prepare for this, I just think it really puts Spurs behind the eight ball. I'm trying to figure out which cliche I should use here.
No, but it's a good point, though. I think Nuno would be happy with a point, especially as they look to build momentum once again after that loss to Crystal Palace. By the way, Reece James, he had his Champions League, his Euros and Super Cup medals stolen during the Zenit game.
Did he take him with him to Zenit?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it was from home or if he left them in the little safe in the hotel, but he didn't put in the code. I presume that it was from his home. Our producer,
I assume it's from his home. Yeah, I was just joking. Yeah,
so they waited all the way till they were playing a game. By the way, they were playing at home, so that's pretty gutsy from the. Well, let's hope that those medals are recuperated for Reece James.
Or I'm sure they could make him some more.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's true. I'm sure they can get the old machine out and just clank out three more. All right, let's talk about the next game. By the way, most of these games that we're talking about in the Premier League are on Sunday, to Jimmy's point, because there was obviously European action for many of them midweek. Sunday, you know, is an extra day of rest for some. All right, let's talk about two high-scoring teams. Mm-hmm. I say two high-scoring teams because it's true. Manchester United, I'm sure you're not surprised about it, but West Ham as well. Multiple digits so far this season. As we tape, West Ham obviously haven't played yet against Dinamo Zagreb, so there's a point to that. But Mikel Antonio won't play in this one. We know that, because he is suspended due to that late red card in the previous game. David Moyes, by the way, returning, of course, to his former team. So that should be an interesting thing. And by the way, James Bench has a great interview with Mark Noble on CBSSports.com discussing, obviously, West Ham's objectives, etc. But as I mentioned, double digits this season so far. West Ham, Manchester United, Man City, and Everton. So, you know, they do like to score. So what do you see here, Jimmy Conrad? West Ham United, who are hosting Manchester United.
Yeah, this is a good game. I'm really looking forward to it for a lot of reasons. One, I got to think that Sir David Moyes, as I like to call him, would like to win this one, since I feel like he got a raw deal as United manager, even though he wasn't the right man for the job anyway. But still, it probably feels
pretty sweet. Him to fail from day one.
Well, I think Sir Alex Ferguson did. I don't think he wanted somebody to come in and be better than him, right? I think
it was just going to be so hard to take over after whoever it was.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
You know,
for
Jesus sure. Would come in there and be like, "Listen, I know you can walk on water, but
I don't even know if Jesus could have won the league with the kind of talent that was at their disposal.
I'm talking about my cousin, by the way.
Now, second, to your point, you mentioned the pass between these teams. West Ham haven't beaten United in almost 2 years in all competitions. But if you remember, they were very close last season at the London Stadium. West Ham were up 1-0 in the 65th minute on a Thomas Suchek goal. And then Paul Pogba hit an absolute banger in the 65th minute. And that unlocked West Ham a little bit. And they ended up losing 3-1. United got the result there. Now, I have to bring this up because I think it's important. Like Chelsea, United have 2 extra days of rest in a European competition because West Ham are in it as well. And the hard part is, when I think about Spurs, they have to travel to France, not as far. Now, West Ham have to travel all the way to Croatia to take on Dinamo Zagreb. And I think that does come into play a little bit.
Yeah, it's significant. Absolutely.
So that's interesting. As you mentioned before, no Mikel Antonio, who got a red card in West Ham's 0-0 draw with Southampton. Dude might be arguably the hottest player in the league. 4 goals and 3 assists. So that's a big loss for them. Got to throw this in as well, because Ole Gunnar, if you like him, don't like him as manager of Manchester United, he does know how to win away from home, unless it's against Young Boys in the Champions League. United are undefeated in the Premier League in their last 28 games, which is insane. And they also, and I have to mention this, to get West Ham in back-to-back games. They play him this weekend. They play him again midweek in the League Cup. And that game is at Old Trafford. So we'll see if there's some strategy being played. Like, are we going to roll out? Mikel Antonio will be able to play the League Cup game. So I guess that will obviously change West Ham's dynamic going forward. And then from a United perspective, I wanted to have a bit of a conversation with you, because we've seen, because they're trying to go to a single pivot so Paul Pogba could be in the midfield a little bit more and go forward. And obviously it's turned out great. He's got 7 assists in 4 games, which is ridiculous. But who's going to be that other player? We've seen Matic. We've seen Fred. We've seen Van de Beek. Is it McTominay's turn? Assuming he's healthy, if he's going to get a run out there. I think they have to figure out what that best 11 is. And that's, I think, the big question for Ole Gunnar moving forward. And then Jadon Sancho, pretty ineffective so far. And obviously they paid a crap ton of money for this guy. And I knew that when they bought him, I don't think they thought Ronaldo was coming in. So that probably changed a few of the equations and how they were going to attack. They put him on the right side against Young Boys in the Champions League. I thought he looked a little bit busier because, as we mentioned before, Ronaldo does have a tendency to drift out wide left. So if you put him out there, he's going to get kind of blocked up. So I'm kind of curious how they can incorporate and get more meaningful touches with Jadon Sancho running at back fours or running at back threes or whatever it is. And I think if they're going to have a lot of success and be a little bit more well-balanced and can a little unpredictable, let's see, for the opponent to hurt you on either side of the field, and obviously have Ronaldo on the end of things in the box or Cavani, whoever it is, they got to figure out a way to unlock Jadon Sancho. That's going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. And then to just counter that from the West Ham perspective, everything that works for West Ham is in that triangle with Saeed Benrahma, and then behind him, Declan Rice, and of course, Tomi Suchek. So to your point, the beginning one about the pivot, that's going to be key and allowing players, of course, like Jadon Sancho to be a bit freer. But you make a good point. I mean, they didn't expect Ronaldo to be there, and I don't think Sancho did either. So now he's been a little bit quiet. How significant, by the way, is it that Cristiano Ronaldo is more powerful than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ole out is the hashtag that's been trending this week. I mean, that happens, what, every other week, I think, regardless of what season. But that was never the case with Sir Alex Ferguson. Our producer makes a good point. Sir Alex Ferguson had everybody in line. He managed a lot of stars, right? Eric Cantona, David Beckham, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. And now Ronaldo, who obviously knows Ole Gunnar Solskjaer very well on the pitch, off the pitch. I feel that maybe the power struggle might be an issue. If Ronaldo isn't happy, I'm just saying this. They lost against Young Boys. They don't get a win here, Jimmy Conrad. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they don't get a result. I don't know if it's going to be a win, but not to eke out a draw, especially with no Mikel Antonio, I think they'd be kicking themselves. And if I'm a Manchester United fan, these are the games that, okay, it's West Ham. They are better. They have some confidence. They got some terrific players in their team. But we have to get a result here if we want to actually be title contenders. You look at your calendar, and yeah, the top six or the traditional top six. I don't think Arsenal falls in there. Traditional top five. But if you have these games, these are the ones, especially away from home, that you have to grind out something. And that's what actually United's been very good at. And because they've been so good at it, that's why I feel like they finished second last season. It's more about getting their home form up to snuff. And that's where I think they got let down a little bit last year and not being able to contend. Not that they were ever going to really win it. Now, to your point about Ronaldo and Ole Gunnar, I think we've been on here enough and talked about Ole Gunnar enough that he feels like he reeks of, I'm a really, really good top assistant coach. Am I the main guy? Probably not. He would have been amazing as the right-hand man for Sir Alex. But that's making those hard decisions, solving problems, sometimes in-game problems, is where I think he struggles a bit. And he might have a good tactical plan to start, but when shit hits the fan, that's where I think he doesn't have all the answers or doesn't have the courage to pull the trigger on players. You know, like today, it didn't work. I thought it was going to work. It didn't work. You're out, you know? And And that's where I think is going to be his next step in his evolution, assuming he can take that next step. Maybe he's hit his ceiling. And I think that's the big fear for United fans is this as good as it's going to get under Ole Gunnar? Now, I just want to bring this up really quick because we talk about, oh, if you fire somebody, well, who are you going to bring in? And every time I see Ajax play, I'm like, oh, yeah, Erik ten Hag. That guy's a beast. And I feel like at some point he's going to be ready to take that step as manager from Ajax as manager to a bigger club. And I think that coach is a tremendous coach. So
he's amazing.
Arsenal could use him too, just to throw Arsenal into the equation.
I think anybody could. I think I think Barcelona picked the wrong Dutch coach, to be honest with you. Erik ten Hag was the absolute thing. Listen, Manchester United need a reaction just for the sake of their fans. And this is going to be a tough one. Mm-hmm. Because West Ham are going to be up for it, Antonio or not. So, you know, pick your poison. Jimmy has given you there some really good lines.
Let me give them to you right now. I'm kind of looking at value here. United are favorites. I'd say United to win in over 2.5 goals. And I say that because West Ham have scored at least two goals in 8 of their last 10 home matches. There have been over 2.5 goals scored in West Ham's 3 home games. And I just feel like we're going to see goals. And as I mentioned before, the last time they played at the London Stadium, it was 3-1. Man United to win over 2.5 goals, plus 150. United to win both teams to score, plus 230. If you are a Cristiano Ronaldo lover, and I understand the guy's an absolute robot, United to win, they have to be exact. Or excuse me, CR7 to score, United to win 2-0, 2-1, or 3-1 is plus 450. So I'm trying to find you some good value and give you a buffet of options to choose from. But that's what I'm looking at the moment. Because I think that United are going to do it. To your point, they have to have a reaction after losing to Young Boys.
Yep. Like I said, at the very beginning, 4 teams this season so far in the Premier League with double digits. And 2 of them are in this game. So, you know, I agree. I think there's going to be goals here. All right, let's keep going here very quickly. Liverpool against Crystal Palace. The last 4 Premier League meetings, aggregate scoreline, by the way. 15 to Liverpool, 1 to Crystal Palace. Will that grow this weekend, Jimmy Conrad?
I mean, Liverpool have won their last 9 matches against Crystal Palace in all competitions. So that trend in itself is looking nice. Crystal Palace have conceded at least 2 goals in their last 4 away matches. This one is at Anfield, where Liverpool are coming off a pretty impressive 3-2 win. I know they had a bad 5 minutes there right ahead of the first half or the end of the first half against AC Milan. But outside of that, I was actually pretty impressed with their tactics and their, it just looked like the Liverpool of old where they were winning trophies. So I like that a lot. Bobby Firmino didn't feature against Milan. Will he get into this one? I'm not so sure. Sadio Mane, Thiago Alcantara, Virgil van Dijk didn't start in the Champions League. So I assume we're going to see all them start. Now, this is another fun fact for you. Mane, whatever you think about Sadio Mane and he misses a ton of chances, he has remarkably scored in each of his last 8 matches against Palace. That's pretty ridiculous. Now, obviously, Edouard, who came on and scored 2 goals against Tottenham, I think will get the start in this one. So I'm curious to see Edouard against Virgil van Dijk. I think we're going to really find out how good Edouard is. I'm feeling under 2.5 goals, plus 150. That's it. Under 2.5 goals is plus 150 in this one. And I know that the stats don't really back that up, but I just feel like this one could be tight in general. Sadio Mane to score anytime, because I mentioned he likes scoring against Crystal Palace, minus 105. But to score first, plus 350, and to be the first home scorer, so the first Liverpool scorer is plus 275. I don't know. I could see a 2-0 here, just pretty nice, comprehensive professional performance, kind of putting Crystal Palace back in their place. Yeah. You beat Tottenham. Yeah. But we're Liverpool, right? Tottenham doesn't win anything. We do. I like most a lot of score. Liverpool to win 2-0, 2-1, or 3-1. They have to win one of those 3 score lines, plus 400. Or if you want to swap out Salah for Mane because he likes to score against Crystal Palace, it's plus 500 with one of those 3 score lines. I'm trying to find something exotic here. Liverpool are the heavy, heavy favorites on Caesar Sportsbook.
Yeah, I like it. And by the way, Liverpool have had more shots in the Premier League than anybody else. That's 100. By the way, so I'm sure Crystal Palace, to your point, Jimmy Conrad, will wake up to reality a little bit because this ain't no Tottenham. This is a very good team right now that's playing very well. All right, producer Des Norris, you want to put up the remaining fixtures here? We got some good ones as well. My Aston Villa against Everton are facing each other as well. This is the return, by the way, of Emiliano Martinez and Jerry Mina. When Emiliano Martinez saved Jerry Mina's penalty in Copa America, and he was like, te voy a comer, I'm going to eat you, and that he did. We also have Man City. against Southampton in that one.
I just want to say that Pep Guardiola and his guys have now scored 5+ goals in 3 of their last 4 matches. So a big rest in peace to Southampton this weekend.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Oh my God.
I mentioned Brighton Leicester. I said a few things on HQ this week. You know, I'm a very big fan of Brighton. I think for all the Super League chatter, all the, you know, giant money makers and all the star power, Brighton is a very good team. And they're playing another very good team in Leicester City. That's another Sunday game. But that's your Premier League roundup for the weekend. All right. We're going to keep on going here, I believe. Not even a break.
No breaks.
Let's talk about Serie A on Paramount Plus. Calcio Cappuccino will be back. But obviously, we have so much coverage here on CBS Sports. Serie A, of course, CBS Sports, Paramount Plus, the home of it. And there's a big one. Jimmy Conrad, Sunday, 2:45 Eastern, Juventus against AC Milan. Milan are the team against which Juventus have both lost the most matches in Serie A. That's 51. And the side against which the Bianconeri have drawn the most games in the competition, 54. So, you know, and by the way, they got a good win, Juventus against Malmo, but they remain winless in the league. Jimmy Conrad, what do you have?
I'm just going to look at the stats, look at some numerical trends, as they say. Milan are undefeated in 25 of their last 27 away matches in Serie A. It's pretty impressive. AC Milan have also kept a clean sheet in 7 of their last 8 matches overall in Serie A, and there have been over 2.5 goals scored in 7 of Juventus's last 8 games in Serie A. This, for me, let's leave the numerical trends and get back into, let's say, the emotional side of things, especially as it stands for Maxi Allegri, who definitely is inheriting a different squad than probably maybe even what he imagined. It's just not really, he's not pressing the right buttons. Obviously, he's got to work through the Cristiano Ronaldo situation, and it just, his players aren't necessarily performing for him either. We've seen Chesney now in goal make a couple mistakes that obviously maybe would have led itself to different results. Maybe not wins, but draws. This is a must win for Juve. They have to win this game. I think if they want to really seriously contend, they can't drop more points, especially to a team they're going to be competing against for the Scudetto. But because of that, because there's going to be maybe this desire, they could lack some patience. You can already see they're getting frustrated quicker than maybe they would be in the past when they were so confident, like, whatever. We always win the Scudetto. It's what we do, you know, and they figure out a way to grind it out. And that might still happen. But I think this team is just a different mixed bag than maybe what Allegri had in the past to get some of those results. And I think he's learning that pretty quickly, that he might not have the right mix of players. Now it's up to him, of course, to prove his genius as a manager to figure that out. I'm saying all this because Juve is a must win. Milan doesn't necessarily have to win it, but it would be go a long way for them to really put their flag in the ground and say, hey, we're going to contend for the title, which means it's going to be a draw plus 250.
I see. Listen, if it's a draw, I see a high scoring draw. I see goals in this one because there's a little bit of desperation. And by the way, Juventus have conceded goals in each of their last 17 league matches. Only twice have they conceded and more consecutively in Serie A. That was 19 in 2010 and 21 in 1955. So they concede goals. AC Milan, to your point, you know, they're feeling pretty good. I'm wondering about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Is he coming back for this one? I'm not sure. But they looked good, AC Milan. I mean, Mike Maignan was amazing against Liverpool. But even without Zlatan, they were offering a few power shots there. By the way, Des, our producer, says that Juventus looked good against Malmo. Yeah, but it's Malmo. Des Norris, it's not AC Milan. So that's going to be an important fixture right there. The fact that they're playing against, by the way, my pick, Jimmy, I think they're your pick as well to win Scudetto AC Milan at this point. This is going to be a big one.
In terms of the value, LME, I thought plus 1,200 for them to win the Scudetto was good. I still think this is Inter Milan's to lose. But yes, continue. Sorry.
No, but that was it. That was really it. That was all I was saying. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I don't know. I don't know if you have any final thoughts over this game. And by the time you finish, I will give you my final score. But I feel both teams will score. It's just about, is the desperation for Max Allegri and Juventus maybe their weakness? Because AC Milan might take advantage of it.
Yes, I think that Milan, despite being outplayed by Liverpool, I think there's a lot to take away from that game. I thought that they showed that if they're disciplined and can remain patient, that they can get opportunities against good teams. And obviously them scoring 2 goals in 2 minutes at Anfield is something you have to respect. So they just are coming off a midweek game where maybe they weren't the better team through the 90 minutes, but I think they learned a lot about themselves this season and the type of quality that they can have. That first goal that they scored, Ante Rebic, I mean, it was like, there was no Liverpool. Oh my, it was like seven or eight passes where Liverpool were chasing shadows the whole time. Yeah. And then all of a sudden Ante Rebic hits it first time into
very dynamic.
I was like, these guys are unbelievable. So if they could tap into that, let's say for longer periods of time, then they could have a little bit of that special sauce that I saw earlier, saw a little bit last season. Now it's just a matter, can they get everybody healthy? Can they get their talisman, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, healthy? When you bring him in, he's got obviously a presence like Cristiano, where a lot of things revolve around him. So does that change the dynamic? Because I really like what Ante Rebic has done so far this season in that nine spot. He's very dynamic. He pulls off the shoulder of center backs. Zlatan maybe used to do that, doesn't do it as much anymore. So it definitely changes what they look like. But as we've seen, we've already seen both of those guys play together at the same time. And that's when Zlatan scored the second against Lazio. So there's a lot of options here for the manager, Stefano Pioli. I think he's got a better team at this current moment. But I think that desperation, Juve are going to probably fight and have a hunger that they're going to have if they want to get back into the Scudetto race. I know it's early, but this isn't the same Juve from a couple seasons past where they could struggle for the first month or two and then come back and win and kind of Bayern Munich their way into winning Serie A again, because they can be awesome the next 8 months. Not out of the realm of possibility given what he's got at his disposal, but this isn't the same Juve team.
Yeah, AC Milan enter this one perfect, 3 wins out of 3 in the league, and Juventus the complete opposite. Let's move on. Inter Milan against Bologna. That's Saturday, noon Eastern. Bologna have scored in each of their last 10 league away games at Inter. That's 14 goals in total. But Inter Milan under Simone Inzaghi have won their last 17 home league games. Of course, that's the Antonio Conte record as well. What do you see here? Inter Milan at home to Bologna.
I think that Inter are going to feel a little hard done by after losing to Real Madrid in the final minutes. And I think that's that's a trend that's a bit worrying, because they had a lead against Sampdoria the weekend before. Two leads, 1-0, gave it up 1-1. Then they went up 2-1. You're like, cool, they got a little fight. Then they give it up again and go 2-2. The game against Real Madrid at home, they just needed to see out the game. Okay, Thibaut Courtois made a couple of good saves. When they made their push, they couldn't break through. A couple minutes left. Let's not risk anything. Just take the draw and we move on. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't see the game out. That's two games in a row now that they couldn't see out. So I'm curious as to what buttons Simone Inzaghi is going to push. We talk about a new manager, or a manager we're familiar with. Obviously, he did very good work with Lazio over the years. Now he's here with a different collection of players, a different group. And now he has to figure out, okay, we have to reset quickly. We need to forget about everything that happens, you know, to Ted Lasso it, be a goldfish, and just focus on the task at hand. And that's where Inter was very good last season. When they could just focus on Serie A, they did the business, and that's ultimately what got them their first Scudetto in 10 years or whatever. So this is a really important game, I think, for a lot of different reasons, but mainly for the manager to make sure he picks the right lineup, and obviously is making sure they're motivated enough to go out and get a result, because it hasn't been the greatest of weeks, because they definitely have dropped some points in both competitions.
Well, but people just care about the lines right now. Jimmy Conrad, what do you have for them?
Yeah, good question with regard to that. Sorry, I got so caught up in thinking about Inter Milan and everybody that's happening.
Romantically involved with Inter.
Yeah. Well, because you make a good point about Bologna, I like Inter to win and both teams to score. I think that's some really good value. That's plus 180. Mm. And I hope that Lautaro can do it. If you want to take it one step further, Lautaro Martinez to score, Inter Milan to win, both teams to score, plus 320.
That's
same thing
good.
For Edin Dzeko. It's pretty good, all things considered. I like the over here, but that doesn't pay that much. It goes, well, if you want to go over 3.5 goals, which feels that's they're so good, the bookies at doing that. That's plus 130. If you want to go under 3.5, it's minus 160. So it's tough. I like Inter to probably go over 2.5 goals, and that's minus 121. Clearly the bookies think that's a good value too. As I mentioned to everybody, do you think that Bologna has enough to score? And as you mentioned, they do have a good history of scoring against Inter. They always seem to figure out a way to get a goal. The last time they haven't scored, well, I guess it was last season, but that was close to the end of the season when Inter didn't have any midweek competitions, could really focus on things. But the last time, about a year ago, I guess it was July 5th I'm seeing here, Inter lost at home to Bologna. So they have something there. I think they'll score. So I think that one where they both score, Inter win and both teams score plus 180 is the one I'd go with.
Awesome, awesome. All right, we're going to go very quick on Roma and Verona because JJ is waiting for us. Verona, by the way, Hellas Verona sacked Di Francesco, Eusebio Di Francesco, so they're facing the hot and ready Roma, Jose Mourinho, that Sunday, noon Eastern. Igor Tudor, one of Pirlo's assistant coaches, he's taking the reins there at Verona. El Shaarawy has been directly involved in 7 goals. Tammy Abraham's looking good. What do you see here for your Roma? Very quickly.
Yeah, I like Tammy Abraham to score anytime, plus 125. I think that he's going to have some influence here. And even though they have a game midweek in the Conference League, I don't think that's going to really impact it. If any manager out there that knows how to manage multiple competitions is Jose Mourinho. So even though I think Verona will get that, that new manager bounce, you know, okay, finally that guy's out, this other guy's in. It seems almost too soon. You didn't even really know what that manager was all about and he got fired. So it looks like a bit of a dumpster fire. I think Roma will take advantage and continue to lead the top of the table. But I like Tammy Abraham to win. And really, here, I'll give you the two things. If you think Verona can score, two values you should look at. If Roma to win, both teams to score, plus 260. And if you think that Roma's going to win with a clean sheet, it's also plus 260. You could bet both of those at the same value and make money.
I love it. I love it, Jimmy Conrad. Here's the rest of the fixtures for Serie A this weekend on Paramount Plus. By the way, it's so much action. You can watch it on CBS Sports Paramount Plus. Des Norris will put it up in a second. But just before we wrap up, we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, Jonathan Johnson will join us for some league action, including PSG against Lyon, Nice against Monaco, and the best storylines of the French league. But there you go. There are your fixtures, by the way, for Serie A this weekend. Take a screenshot, do whatever you got to do, but we will be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back, everybody, to Que Golazo, and we welcome, of course, we still have Jimmy Conrad, but Jonathan Johnson with an old school. I love it. Look at that PSG shirt. Very nice. Is that the Ronaldinho one, Jonathan Johnson, or is that a little later? What is that?
No, man, this is much older. This is the original golden era. Think like High and Leonardo. I mean, I saw Jimmy was wearing a dustbin bag and, you know, figured I'd bring up the levels of class.
That hurts my soul. I just wanted to give a shout out to Puma when they actually made good jerseys. The ones that they're wearing now are terrible. So
you mean the advertising ones?
Oh, yeah, it's so bad. So bad. Anyway, thanks for that dig, JJ. Appreciate it.
I love it. Well, Jonathan Johnson, I'm repping for both of us right here with Navy FC. All right, let's talk about Ligue 1. PSG, of course, coming back after that draw against Club Brugge. Jonathan Johnson, now they face Lyon. This is a big game, buddy. What do you have for us, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big game for many reasons. Obviously, PSG's most difficult Ligue 1 fixture so far. It's a big game for Lyon as well because it's not been an ideal start to the season for them. We'll see how they get on. We know that they've got Europa League action as well against Rangers to get them in the mood for that one. They're missing Moussa Dembélé, so they're going to need him back for the trip to Parc des Princes, I feel. We'll see what happens there. But PSG have their own headaches to contend with. We don't know the severity of Kylian Mbappe's knock from the match against Club Brugge yet. So that will obviously factor into Pochettino's thinking when he debates about how he can try to get Messi, Neymar and Mbappe firing together. And perhaps it's that, you know, he's got one less headache and doesn't have Mbappe to count on this weekend. We know that he will have Angel Di Maria back. Di Maria obviously suspended in the Champions League, but eligible to play in Ligue 1. He'll make a big difference. Idrissa Gueye will be back as well. And I think he was missed in the midfield. And then obviously another question mark over Marco Verratti as well. So plenty for PSG, you know, to potentially feel buoyed by coming into this match. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting test because PSG's fixture list so far has been relatively straightforward. And Lyon are still finding their identity, their shape under Boss. So, you know, I think it's a big game for both and an early marker in the season for these two sides.
Okay, JJ, you said that Mauricio Pochettino has some headaches, or he's going to have one less headache because he doesn't have to choose who's going to start or whatever it is. Is Pochettino creating his own headaches? Because it doesn't seem like he has gotten the right lineup, and I know that he hasn't had everybody at his disposal. There's a ton of expectation on this team, especially from me. I'll raise my hand and say I've expected better. And they just look like maybe they have too many luxury players and not enough players that get in and do the fight, because you have to have that balance in a team. And maybe that's what you're talking about with regard to headaches.
Yeah, I think that it's fair to say that Pochettino doesn't yet know his strongest 11. But let's also bear in mind that with the transfer dealings that they did over the summer, it's basically a new squad for him. It's not the same squad that he inherited in January. And once everyone's fit and available, he won't have to, you know, go with makeshift players in certain positions, like a Verratti as a number 10, for example. The real crux of the issue is going to be how often he has to do without certain key players, because Verratti, you know, we've said it so many times before, he's still so important, still so influential in that midfield. But we also saw the value of Idrissa Gueye as well against Club Brugge, because he does exactly what you were talking about, you know, gets stuck in, mucks in, gets hold of the ball, and gives them a real enforcing presence in the midfield. I thought Pochettino could have gone with somebody like a Marquinhos for that match in particular, because he's so much more of a midfield enforcer than anyone else that PSG had out on the field in Belgium. But, you know, I also think that they lack that creativity as well. And, you know, they still need to solve that. So Pochettino, in terms of the headaches that he has, he just has to settle on an actual 11 that he feels, you know, he can get to function and, you know, perhaps make a few difficult decisions along the way, because he's not going to be able to accommodate all of those stars, you know, especially when you consider a possible 3-4-3 formation where, you know, you've got Nuno Mendes, who already looks very, very impressive, you know, coming on with a late cameo against Club Brugge. It doesn't look like it's going to be that long before he's installed into that starting 11. So that's going to be one less position, you know, for potentially one of those luxury players that you were mentioning.
And that's a position that's very needed, I think, in terms of vulnerability for PSG. Very quick question here, JJ. Obviously, this game's at Parc des Princes. What's the mood in Paris after, you know, the midweek loss? And how do you think there's going to be a little bit of pressure of the sentiment and the atmosphere as Mauricio Pochettino and PSG get ready for Lyon?
I don't think there's necessarily going to be any pressure just yet. There'll be some expectancy. I think that the reaction probably would have been a lot worse if they'd lost to Club Brugge, which, to be perfectly honest, give credit to Club Brugge, they absolutely deserve the draw. And I don't think people would have been that stunned if they'd actually managed to sneak the win. They had some good chances. You know, Noah Lang almost scored an absolutely stunning bicycle kick effort, which, you know, I think many people would have sort of wanted to have seen gone in, you know, just because it would have been one of the goals of the competition. So we'll see how PSG deal with that. I don't think there'll be any real, you know, backlash, but there will be an expectancy now that the likes of Messi, the likes of Neymar in particular, who's been very, very jaded so far this season, you know, will finally step up and start to deliver. And I think that's one of the main concerns for PSG at this moment in time, aside from Mbappe and that potential injury that could keep him out for a while. The fact that Neymar is just drifting through games at the moment and rarely even registering. And, you know, I had to remind myself a couple of times that he was on the pitch in Belgium, and that's not digging him out. It's just, you know, saying it as it is, you know, he was not on the ball enough, not involved enough. And I think that's something that Pochettino absolutely has to remedy as soon as possible. But I think certain players returning to particularly the midfield, you know, will help in terms of, you know, creating clear-cut chances for PSG. And also if Mbappe is out, potentially opens the door to Mauro Icardi as well. So I think the fans will be expecting some sort of show to be put on by PSG against Lyon.
Yeah, all right. I said a loss. It felt like a loss. It was a midweek draw. Jimmy, give me that betting tip, baby.
There is no betting tip. It's so heavily favored to PSG. I mean, just pick your poison. Really, the values are the players that you think might score in this one.
Draw 440, though, Jimmy Conrad.
What's that?
Draw plus 440, though. You don't see a draw?
I mean, no, I don't see a draw. I mean, very similar to Juventus. This is a game that PSG need to have. They have to win. Mm-hmm. They need to kind of show some resolve and to be able to rebound in a positive fashion. So it's so one-sided. I'll come back to it and take a look at that. I actually, though, had a question about Nice.
Yeah, let's get into it. Who are they playing today?
Monaco and – no, Monaco not looking the same, at least to start the season, as they did last year. I did want to talk about Nice because Christophe Galtier left Lille after winning Ligue 1, which I found still to be perplexing, but I know you have some insight on that, JJ. But Nice have played 4 games, they've scored 10 goals, and have given up 0. So he leaves the Ligue 1 champs to go to Nice, who are relatively mid-table, and he's absolutely crushing it with them. I actually think they're the favorites and should beat Monaco, all things considered. Talk to me about Galtier and what he's done so far with Nice. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were questioning his decision to leave Lille. But I think when you look at the way that the Lille project has gone since they won their title, people aren't really surprised that they're struggling this season. You know, there was a fire sale expected. We didn't see that quite happen in the summer, but there were potential transfers that could have gone through at the last minute. Renato Sanchez, had he stayed fit, would have left the club. And, you know, there's just a feeling of apathy around Lille. It was quite sad, really, in the build-up to that game against Wolfsburg, that Lille were offering tickets around at very cheap prices because there were about 19,000 seats available in the 24 hours before the game. And that's to see the French champions in action, which is really saddening for me as somebody who's really passionate about Ligue 1 and French football, French domestic football as a whole. But, you know, I think Galtier as well, he knew, I mean, he's got very close ties, you know, to sporting director at Nice, Fournier, and he knew the project that was coming together at Nice. So he was very motivated to go there. Something else you have to consider as well with French teams is when they don't have continental commitments, you quite often have these teams that are, you know, have quite a strong starting 11 with maybe one or two good subs, but they don't necessarily have the strength mm-hmm. and depth to compete mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. the continental competitions. Now, Nice are one of those teams where you look at their starting 11, they have some very, very good players now, especially after a good summer transfer window. And now Galtier is putting those pieces together and they're looking like a very good team. I'll be honest, I didn't expect them to quite hit the ground running as they have, but, you know, Galtier coming in, he's, in my opinion, he's France's best French coach who still coaches in Ligue 1. You know, I can't speak highly enough of him. And the fact that he's gone to Nice suggests to me that he sees that as being the project, the most credible project in terms of challenging PSG over the coming sort of 3 to 5 years. He could have gone to a club like Lyon. They were interested in him. There was an interview, but he chose Nice, and not only because of his links with Fournier, but because of that project that they're putting in front of him, you know, and the early signs are very positive. Obviously, we'll see how it pans out with the game that's going to be replayed against Marseille. We saw those ugly scenes a couple mm-hmm, of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That decision's now been made where it will be replayed at a neutral venue with no fans. But, you know, Nice looking very, very good. And the fact that the defense is so tight is something that really surprised me, despite the fact that they managed to bring in Todibo on a permanent deal and strengthen around him as well.
All right, very quickly, Jimmy Conrad.
I got some bets on that. Yeah, I would say it's crazy to me that Nice are actually the slight underdogs at home against Monaco, who've only won one game all season, haven't looked the same, even though they got Wissam Ben Yedder and Kevin Volland, and I get it. But Nice to win straight up is plus 170. I'm looking at that. And then really quick about PSG. If they win and both teams score, which I expect, Lyon is very good at hitting the back of the net, but they're also good at giving up goals as well, especially in their last two games, which have been wins. So PSG to win, both teams to score, plus 145 is the best value I can find with regard to that.
All right, let's do Lens v. Lille under a minute. Let's see if we can do it. JJ, talk to me about this game, and then Jimmy with the betting tips right after.
Yep.
All right, so Lille, difficult start to the season, for obvious reasons. I've never been convinced that Jocelyn Gourvennec was a good coach, a good choice of replacement coach for Galtier, and that's kind of proving my point at this moment in time. Lens, they've lost a couple of key players over the summer, but they've still managed to keep the same sort of core of the squad. I really, really rate Franck Aiz. I mean, we're talking about Galtier. We just talked about Galtier now. I think Aiz is potentially the next guy who could follow in his footsteps. And Lens, I perhaps fancy them to nick this derby.
Yeah, plus 155 for them to win straight up. Lille's plus 180. The draw's plus 230. So I kind of am going with Lens as well. They're undefeated right now, two wins and three draws, off to a great start. And I think if they could get some points and potentially win all three against the reigning league champs, that'd be something they could be very proud of. And we'll see. It's a crazy year in Ligue 1. I mean, we have PSG in that storyline, but everything else underneath, it's very competitive.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because I want to ask one final question to wrap everything up in Ligue 1 from both of you. Jimmy, let's begin with you. What's your biggest Ligue 1 takeaway so far, aside from obviously PSG? You can include PSG, but if there's anything else that has struck to you.
I'm just going to say that Marseille, my favorite club in Ligue 1, are currently undefeated as well. Shout out to Jorge Sampaoli for figuring it out. Obviously some work to do, but it's been a great start. 10 goals, 4 or 5 against, kind of figuring it out on both sides of the ball. Obviously, they got to replay that game against Nice. They were down 1-0 when that thing got canceled, and Dimitri Payet took it upon himself to take on all the fans. I respect the courage. I mean, respect the courage of him to try to do that. But I'm really excited for Marseille. So that would be flying under the radar of a team we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I completely agree with Jimmy as well. Credit where it's due. You know, Marseille have really turned it around. And I think that, there's some very interesting players, sort of coming back into form at the moment. You've got Under, who I think looks very good both with Marseille and Turkey. You've got Conrad De La Fuente, who's really relishing the extra minutes that he's being given in France. And then you've got, some of the other summer arrivals. Guendouzi as well, I think, has really, come on after, stagnating a bit. So Marseille, definitely a big positive. And, we've already spoken at length about Nice, who I think, have really impressed me with the way that they've been able to hit the ground running. And, Lille being one of the more disappointing sides. I mean, I would mention Bordeaux here, but I didn't expect them to be, in any way, shape or form competitive. Obviously, they got Petkovic from Switzerland, but the club was such a mess, being saved from financial oblivion, that it doesn't surprise me to see them sort of struggling down there at this moment in time.
That's a shame. Bordeaux, such a great city, such a great area in France. Hopefully the team will recover. All right, before we say goodbye, everybody, we'll just quickly discuss La Liga, some games of interest. Barcelona-Granada is on Monday, by the way, but Valencia face Real Madrid at Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, and Atletico Madrid against Bilbao Saturday, 10:15 Eastern as well. A few other games. Quick thoughts on La Liga from each of you. Jimmy, anything that sticks out to you? I like Falcao at Rayo Vallecano as well.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Falcao with a number 3 shirt.
Yeah, which is weird. He should be playing center back, which would be
so
amazing
random
to see him. But I like that all the teams that are, well, there's four teams. There's quite a few undefeated teams in La Liga right now, but we're getting to see some of the best with Atletico taking on Athletic. And then Valencia Madrid. I mean, Valencia, this is quite probably the biggest surprise that I've seen under Jose Bordalas, the manager. He's got them with an identity. They've got good spirit about them. This is going to be a really, really big test for them as they take on Real Madrid at home. Madrid, obviously, lights out so far and doing well under Carlo Ancelotti. Karim Benzema, 5 goals, 4 assists so far in 4 games in La Liga. So if Valencia can get past this test and at least get a result, then I could see them potentially finishing top 6, which I would never would have thought I'd be saying this after they've been struggling the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been some questionable transfer dealings as well with some of the players that have forced out sort of over the last couple of years. But, you know, it's funny, actually, the most consistent team in terms of their in terms of 100% record in La Liga are Villarreal down in mid-table with three draws from three games. But, you know, to see Valencia up there, it's great. It's a real throwback to the old days of La Liga. Real Madrid, kind of hard to completely judge them at this moment in time. Yes, all the results are positive. They left it very late against Inter Milan, you know, just about got it done. So this, you know, for me is kind of their opportunity to set down a marker, because Courtois did save them a couple of times against Inter. That could have quite easily been a draw or worse for them in midweek. So I'm keen to see how they develop, but I'm happy to see Camavinga has hit the ground running.
Absolutely. And it's something to be said about that going against Inter Milan. Valverde to Camavinga to Rodrigo. That's the future of Real Madrid. All right. Before we say goodbye, I want final thoughts and your goodbyes. Final thoughts from anything. Maybe something that we haven't mentioned. Maybe you want to mention again. Jonathan Johnson, why don't you finish us off with your final thoughts as we say goodbye?
Sure, because it occurred to me just after we finished the Ligue 1 chat, also giving a shout out to Angers, who are doing very well near the top of the table. Nobody expected that. They were administratively relegated over the summer, got a reprieve along with Bordeaux, and now they're up there in the early contention for European qualification with Mohamed Ali Cho. Don't sleep on him. He's a very, very exciting youngster, English, coming through in Ligue 1. We'll see how long he stays in France, but he's definitely somebody to keep an eye on this season.
Yeah, and I just want to give a shout out to Atlanta United in Major League Soccer. Obviously had some turmoil with Gabriel Heinze as the coach. They've got that figured out. Their interim coach did a great job, and then they hired Gonzalo Pineda from Seattle Sounders. They've won 6 out of their last 7. Joseph Martinez is banging in the goals, and now they're quietly working their way back up to the table. They're currently in 7th, but I had to give them some love. They're playing so well right now that they can continue to keep it up. I think they could be favorites to win MLS Cup once again.
That's great, Joseph Martinez, a friend of the show. Thank you so much, everybody, for watching and listening to our weekend preview. Follow the Que Golazo podcast on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod. Subscribe to the Que Golazo page on YouTube and hit that notification bell. And of course, subscribe to Que Golazo wherever you are. Jimmy Conrad, is that maracas or something? I don't know. Put it on in the background. I love it. But thank you so much, everybody. Jonathan Johnson, make sure that you follow him, John_LeGossip, and Jimmy Conrad on Twitter and Instagram. We will see you next time. Enjoy the action this weekend.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.